Hello and welcome to Rhythm and Brews. We've got the gang from our, Jesus, the gang? Am I my dad?
The gang does show tunes.
The gang literally is out here, so we're good.
We've got the crew from our Christmas songs episode back together for a show tunes episode. Kat, I'll let you introduce yourself first.
Hi, I'm Kat.
That was really good.
Yeah, nice ring to it.
Listeners know me. They love me.
And DJ?
Hi, I'm Kat.
And Brian?
Hello. Musical episode.
Oh, that was perfect.
Thanks.
Welcome back. I think, DJ, you were the one that brought up the idea for this episode with me, and I think you and Brian had talked about it previously.
Yeah, I talked to you about it at a Christmas party, I believe.
That sounds right. Yeah. And right after our Christmas episode, probably.
Yeah, fresh off the Christmas episode.
And Brian, you, me, and Kat have a pretty storied past when it comes to musicals.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've seen a bunch together. We used to go to this local theater, North Shore Music Theater, all the time to see whatever came through, and then we've seen a couple other things together. Hairspray, I think you took me to the first Hairspray show I've ever seen.
Yeah, I actually took DJ to his first Broadway show, which was also Hairspray.
Really?
It was awesome. Yeah,
really. We have a very storied musical.
You are a musical evangelist.
Yeah, I guess I am. I mean, me and DJ and our friend Dave meet on a semi-regular basis, call it musical boys, and just like watch good musicals.
I like that. I would say through high school and most of college, I thought I was too cool for musicals. I was like, oh, they're so lame.
I feel like people always think they're too cool for musicals.
Yeah. When you're a kid in fifth grade, you definitely don't admit that you love Grease.
Come on. It's so good.
Yeah, I know, but nobody else did.
It's more so the fact that it's some of the most clever songwriting written.
That's what hooks me about it now,
definitely.
Too. Yeah, so I would say some of the best songwriters in the business are writing show tunes.
It's crazy.
And
I feel like there's kind of a gender stigma on it because I never had that like secret musical love. I could just be like, Grease is my favorite when I was in third grade and tell the entire world.
Our society is messed up.
Yeah,
man.
Well, I was a theater kid when I was a kid, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think it even now has sort of a feminine label to it or like sense to it a little bit,
but it shouldn't.
I'm not saying like it feels that way. I'm just saying that's how society kind of thinks about it.
I mean, it's the older you get, the like easier it is for a man to admit that he likes musicals, but
yeah, definitely.
If I told my dad that I got he and I tickets to a Broadway show, he'd ground me.
Now,
like
I'm in my
you
30s,
actually
baby
lived
boy.
Out the story of Billy Elliot, except instead of dancing, it was seeing musicals.
Yeah, I slam my door and then throw myself dramatically up against it, and then keep my hands to it, and then turn my face away.
Deep sigh.
Yeah. Cue song.
Well, let's get into our first segment here, which is BYOB. Today I did the famous Taddy Porter by Samuel Smith Brewery, just in honor of Cole Porter. Has a couple of classic musicals that he's written. He's, speaking of clever songwriting, one of the first guys to, I think, really write that extremely clever lyrical style that still influences musical songwriting today. So anyway, there. That's my one. Kat, what do you got?
I have Young's Double Chocolate Stout. I got this one because one of my songs is from Matilda. And I think anything that anybody remembers about Matilda is Bruce Bogtrotter and the like 17-layer giant chocolate cake. So
disgusting.
Yes, I have a double chocolate porter in honor of that.
Into which the cook's blood, sweat, and tears literally went.
Yeah.
So gross.
That is disgusting. I had a hard time trying to find like a really good one. It got to the point where I was like, maybe I should just fucking drink Hairspray. But then I found
suicide on the show.
Yeah. This collective arts beer called Rhyme and Reason. It's an extra pale ale, and the artwork on it has a very like musical theme to it.
That rules.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
It looks like Newsies or West Side
Story.
Yeah, just like a really busy, colorful city.
And Brian,
I picked up the non-alcoholic drink that you had in your fridge, and it's bubbly, just like my favorite musicals. Thank you.
Sounds like a commercial.
Does anyone have the bottle opener?
No, we don't live here.
Well, it's usually right on this table, and that's why.
Oh, check in that drawer.
If there's one thing that could stall this podcast, it's definitely not finding a bottle opener.
All right, let's crack these babies open.
Oh, I cracked mine. Sorry. I'd hate to quote Gilly, but sorry.
You love to quote Gilly.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
I love to quote Gilly.
Ew.
It's bad?
No, it's all right.
I thought you were going to say, no, it's good, but instead, no, it's all right.
Yeah. It's fine.
What an asshole.
Mine's so funny.
Who's going first?
I thought Kitty Cat was going first.
Yeah, Kat, let's have you go first. What's what musical is your first song from?
Let's go with a part of that from the last 5 years.
Ooh.
What? What's the play and what's the song?
So the last 5 years is the musical. It's a really cool structure. So the story is a couple. They are Kathy, played by Anna Kendrick in the film version, and Jamie, played by Jeremy Jordan.
My boy.
And the story is told from both of their point of views, but in reverse of each other. So her part of the story tells their relationship from the very end of it, and his part of the story tells their relationship from the very beginning, and they actually don't have any songs together until one in the middle.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it intersects their story that
way. Wow, that's awesome.
I still haven't watched it. I can't believe I haven't.
Brian, I feel like you would love it.
I know. Yeah. I think I told you guys about it.
Oh, really?
When I saw the trailer, I was like, this looks so good, and I never saw it.
I am obsessed with this musical. I listen to the soundtrack all the time. I've watched the movie like 5 or 6 times.
Sure.
It's not spoilerly. No. Spoilery to say this, because the whole thing is basically about a breakup. So it's depressing throughout, so it's different from a lot of musicals where I feel like usually it's sort of uplifting, even if there are heavier parts to it. There's something about that musical that I can't revisit over and over again as a movie or as a play because of that, but the songs on it are so good.
The songs are so good, and this song in particular is close to the middle of their story. So Jamie is a really popular author. He has a book that just like exploded, and he's huge in the literature community. And Kathy's a struggling actress, and she struggles throughout the whole story. So they have that kind of comparison where he's getting to live his dream, and she's constantly trying to live her dream, and she never quite gets there. So she's always kind of in his shadow. And this song is her saying, you know, I'm okay to be in his shadow because at least I'm a part of his success. Like, I'm part of this story.
Who's in this again?
Anna Kendrick and Jeremy Jordan.
Okay. What's the Jason Segel movie that has a similar...
Five-Year Engagement.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The plot of this reminds me of like a 500 Days of Summer meets like La La Land kind of thing.
Yeah, essentially.
I still haven't seen 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, well, you would love it. That's great. So great.
Yeah.
All right, DJ, why don't you give us your first one?
Okay, I'll go with Mama, I'm a Big Girl Now by the cast of Hairspray.
Hell yeah.
More so just three different versions of the same character.
I think we all have a Hairspray song.
That rules. I wonder why.
But yeah, this holds a big place in my heart because of Brian. I've never seen the 80s version of Hairspray, like the original version, but the musical itself is like one of the best things ever.
Mm-hmm. It's John Waters,
it's a John
one's
Waters
great.
Right?
Is it?
It's not a musical though, but it is really great. We should definitely watch it.
Yeah, because he has I've seen Crybaby, which I really like, but aren't like most of his movies just really weird?
Yeah, this one is his most commercially accessible one.
Okay.
It doesn't feel as weird as like Crybaby or Pink Flamingos, piece of shit movie. But
I remember being shocked watching the John Waters version of the movie because it's only rated PG, but there's a scene where they're protesting and a character is holding up a sign that says like the TV station is full of assholes, and it says the full word assholes and the O is a butthole.
Whoa.
It's really,
like,
really
rough. PG?
Well, weren't the like the ratings weird back
then?
Yeah,
I think so.
They were different.
Yeah.
Because parental guidance just means you have to have a parent with you. Yeah. So, like,
I actually don't even think it means that. I think it just means it's an encouragement to parents to use their guidance.
Yeah.
Like, I think the only ones that actually require a parent to be with you is R and above.
Even, well, I mean, I think back then I would guess that PG-13 would be, you know, like parental guidance for anyone under 13.
I think even that is like parental guidance. But think harder about it if your kid is under 13.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you ever seen at like the movie theater they have that scale where it's like, what do each of these ratings mean?
Yes.
I love the one that is I saw this one years ago, but it had X as one of the ratings on there back when that was still a thing. It had like icons of who should be seeing these movies underneath each of them, and it was like an old grandpa.
Oh God.
That's so creepy.
Yikes. But I love this song, and this song isn't even in the movie version. It just plays during the credits.
It's my one gripe about the... It's not even a gripe. It's just, it's such a good song, and I'm glad they bothered putting it in the credits of the movie.
I really liked how they did it in the live version that they did on Fox a couple years ago, where they had it spanning between the three different screens of the character.
The director of the movie one, the movie musical, Jesus Christ, I can't speak, specifically said he didn't want to put this song in the movie because he would have to do a three-way split screen and it wouldn't work. Tonally.
Yeah.
And it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, I think I like it most because I relate to it so much, just being a young girl growing up and wanting to break free.
In the heart of Baltimore.
Yeah. It means a lot to me.
All right, Brian, what's your song off of Hairspray?
From Hairspray, my favorite is the finale number, You Can't Stop the Beat. This knocked me on my goddamn ass the first time I heard it. I had seen the John Waters movie when I was a little bit younger, and then when the movie musical came out, that's when I heard the music from it. It blew me away. I saw this movie 7 times in the theater.
Really?
Whoa.
Wow.
It's the most I've ever seen a movie in the theater. It rocked me. The music was so
it
good.
Is, mm-hmm. It is so good. When we were... coming up with our playlists, for some reason I didn't pull up musicals that I liked and like look through all the songs. I just was like recalling from memories songs that I really liked. And then when you sent me your list, I was like, You Can't Stop the Beat, god damn it, that's easily the best song on that entire musical.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. Like, we're not gonna get anything done during this song.
Yeah, I wasn't even listening to what you were saying.
It's such an earworm.
I've heard the song more than any other musical song probably my entire life. Still gives me chills every time I listen to it.
It's just such a great finale for the show too.
Perfect. The message is so cool. Everything about it. This musical in general, I have such a awesome past with, just because, like I said, most times I've ever seen a movie in the theater. I took you guys to see a local production. I took Deej to see it on Broadway. I've seen it on Broadway twice, and then like a handful of local productions, one of which is North Shore that we're going to go to later this year.
Yeah, I can't wait to see theirs, because they have a round stage, so I'm really interested to see how that choreography will be.
Me too. I feel like I've been waiting for them to do it there since we've been seeing shows there. It's just so great. The story is so killer. You wouldn't expect it to be so much about racism, but it's like very much about racism.
Yeah.
In such like a uplifting way.
I was pleasantly surprised it wasn't about Hairspray.
It's such a minuscule part of it. The weirdest thing about this, the fact that it's called Hairspray, is in the musical, it's because the Courtney Collins Show is sponsored by Hairspray, like a company of Hairspray. But in the John Waters one, they're competing to be Miss Auto Show.
Yeah.
There's not even a specific...
She just has
Hairspray
really
brand.
Big hair.
Yeah, it's just they called it Hairspray because of the hairdos.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that they tied it in later with an actual like company of Hairspray.
So the song that I picked off of Hairspray is Without Love.
Ooh.
I do love this song.
It's so damn good.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I think the version I have on here is from the movie version, which is not necessarily the best version of it, only because Amanda Bynes cannot sing.
She can't really. Yeah. She sells it, but she can't really sing.
Yeah, she does like comedic things with her voice to mask the fact that she has the weakest one in this collection.
And I'm never going back.
Yeah,
exactly. And if they try to stop us, true word.
I say that all the time. I can't say the word seaweed without saying it.
Seaweed.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to her?
Seaweed?
She went insane. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Seaweed is such a weird name that I'm just sort of like, that has to rhyme. That has to be like a key rhyme in one of these songs, and they just worked backwards from there. Like,
yeah. Do they say why they call him Seaweed?
I don't think so.
They don't really like
Maybe his name is like Seymour and Seaweed's a nickname or something.
Maybe. I mean, he introduced himself as Seaweed J. Stubbs. So.
Okay.
It's a Chinmo scenario.
That has a story behind it. We'll go there later.
Yeah.
But,
we'll get to that. Ha-ha.
But I think when seeing this in the theater, without love, the first time I hit that, I was like, I'm fucking done.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing
I really like about the musical in general is there are so many songs that feel like a climax because there's so many parallel stories going on in it. Like you have the whole racism protest thing that feels like it's got its own climax, which I would say is probably this song. Yeah. And then you have the storyline of Tracy just trying to get on the show and like gain acceptance and all of that. And You Can't Stop the Beat is like that big climactic finale moment. So I don't know. I just like that it's, I don't want to say complex. It's not like a complex story, but it's got a lot going on and it's all like really interesting.
Yeah. Tracy, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Tracy as a character is really complex for me and just kind of inspiring just because she's getting shit on the whole movie pretty much. Like for a bunch of different reasons, the way she looks, who she's hanging out with, and she like never even comes close to like feeling bad about it. It's very
She is a damn ass free spirit.
Yeah, she really is. That's one of my favorite things about this musical is it is so complex, but there's that message of you should feel empowered by yourself no matter your race, your size, your talent, where you are class wise, like just accept who you are and be that and you'll be great.
So dope.
I know that we agree that Amanda Bynes cannot sing, but she's not the worst singer in this movie. I think the worst singer in this movie is John Travolta.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably true.
But again, it's a comedic effect.
It's a comedic effect, so we can make it work.
But even still, it's like, ooh.
See, I honestly prefer the way he sings over Harvey Fierstein, who plays this character originally on Broadway. But
I'm sorry, did you say sings?
Oh, sorry. crackles? I don't know what the word is, but I actually like the way Harvey Fierstein plays the character in general, especially like the jokes and dialogue, but I think I prefer an actual.
I was telling Brian the story on the way over here, but back when Grease was having the 20th anniversary, Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta were on like Entertainment Tonight or something, and they were doing like a like an impromptu like duet to one of their songs from Grease. And I was watching it with my grandparents, and my grandmother was like, "He still can't sing."
So furious.
Yeah.
So mad about it.
She's like the nicest lady. So for her to be like so upset, like she was so excited to see Grease and then she saw it and she's like, this guy's voice is fucking terrible.
Kat, do you want to round out our Hairspray podcast? Sure.
So my song selection from Hairspray is Run and Tell That.
Ooh.
This song, every time I've seen it performed live, whether it's on like actually live in person, when they did Hairspray live, it's always a showstopper. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they always cast a perfect Seaweed and a perfect Lil Inez and they just crush it every time.
It's so true.
Especially in the movie version, the Lil Inez, we were listening to it this morning and I was like, oof, Lil Inez, you are killing
me. Yeah. She's a killer. She's so
she
good.
Steals the show in this song. For
oh,
sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I actually like didn't even really give her a second thought until I saw Hairspray with you and then when she started singing, you were like, oof, and I was like, she is
ooh,
awesome.
Bitch.
shut up.
Slap her. Try to cover it up, all my friend.
Yeah.
This song is just like, it's so fun, but it like the theme of the musical, it has some complex undertones to it, but you just want to like, it's a romping in the aisles.
Yeah.
Smash it.
Ripping your clothes off.
Yeah. A dancing in the aisles romp. That's what I'm going to say.
It's an oofing in the aisles romp.
Yeah.
When we were, I think we were watching it live, the live televised version that they did of this, and Kat was just live tweeting and saw someone tweet, okay, Lil Inez, I see you. Killed me.
Oh, so good. This song is just so fun.
So fun.
I love it.
The production that we went to see was in Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
and it was bonkers how good that was.
Yeah.
It was like, what was it? what was that college that it was through?
UConn.
UConn. And I was blown away. They had like actors that had done some of the parts on Broadway. Remember whoever played Kevin, whatever, some dude who played Edna, did it on Broadway when we went to go see it. So many parallels. That's the world is weird.
It's so weird. You never think about that there are kids and teenagers and college age kids in Broadway musicals. So obviously those people are in school somewhere, potentially doing those versions of those musicals.
Crazy.
So every once in a while you find those gems, but then other times you go to a high school production and it's not great.
Woof. I went to see Hairspray at Burlington High. It was good, but there was one part in particular where Seaward is actually singing the song and jump at the end. It's this big note. He jumps off the like record table and lands on his heels, rolls backwards, and his feet get caught upside down on the thing that he jumped off of. And the whole cast is just like watching him breathless while he like struggles to get out of this weird position he's in. And I was like, I think my heart just exploded. It's kind of it's hard to watch.
All right, DJ, move us into another musical.
Okay. My new musical is from Little Shop of Horrors.
Ooh, I didn't even think of it.
So it's, I'm going to do Skid Row.
Yeah.
It is Broadway perfection.
It really is so good.
I think I've only ever seen this once, but it was you guys sat me down and forced me to watch it.
Yeah.
I don't mean that because it was bad. I just mean like I had never seen it and it was like, you need to see this.
It's so great.
I love Rick Moranis in general, but for him to be like, you know, someone who you're not expecting to be a good singer and to come out and sing like the way he does is like, you, I guess, like relate to him a lot, but you also are like rooting for him when you realize like how good of a singer he can be and like just his character in general. Like you're rooting for this little underdog to get the girl from like this asshole who Steve Martin is my favorite person
so
in the
good.
Comedy hero.
And so good in this movie, but you're rooting for Rick Moranis to get the girl.
He's a monster.
Yeah.
He's very funny about it, but he is horrible.
Yeah, he's a big dumb piece of shit in this movie.
I can't claim to be like an expert on musicals, but I feel like that's got to be one of the earlier musicals that doesn't take itself that seriously.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of one that does it before it.
And there's something so like there's something so charming about that.
Yeah.
I love their use of background singers in this. I think it's so clever visually.
Yeah.
It's a really cool trick and just how they incorporate them because they're up in the billboard. And I just think it's like a really unique way to get background singers in, but still try to make it feel like you're still in that universe.
They pay a ton of homage to that in Hairspray too. Yeah. They do the same kind of thing.
Enough about Hairspray.
Hey, did you know the background singers from Little Shop are called the Cretans? They never actually say it in the movie, but they're billed as the Cretans.
Yeah. Their names are based on actual like doo-wop bands too.
Oh,
like,
I love that.
Chiffon, Ronette, and I forget the third one, but
like doo-wop groups. That's so cool.
Like the Chiffons, the Ronettes, and whatever the
I want to look that up. That's really cool.
Yeah, I'll look it up right now.
Also, the song that they sing at the beginning that's like Little Shop of Horrors.
Dude,
it's the same song from Hamlet 2 when he's like, rock me, rock
rock me, sexy Jesus. Holy shit, it's ripped completely off.
Oh my, Hamlet 2 is so fucking funny.
It's
so
great.
They did Little Shop of Horrors live at the Hollywood Bowl, I think last year or the year before. And Jake Gyllenhaal was the Rick Moranis character and Taron Killam was the dentist. That and I think that's such
perfect casting.
It's Crystal, the third one. So the Crystals.
Oh my God, I love
like it.
So I think CeeLo Green was Audrey too.
I thought you were going to say was one of them.
I thought you were going to say Audrey 1. Ellen Green in the movie. When you first see this
Cat
movie.
Cat confused Ellen and CeeLo.
it's a common
thing. Oh, very common. I think when you first see it, you don't realize that her insane voice is like played up for comedy. So you're just like, she has the weirdest voice, but it is so funny the way she like really leans into it. The silently
Yeah.
But this Skid Row is so freaking good.
It's the best version of Little Shop in general. Like, I've never seen the play. But
was it a movie before a play?
Yeah, it was like a 50s movie.
Interesting.
It wasn't a play. It was just a regular,
really?
Yeah, it was a regular movie.
And it probably took itself seriously at
I'm
the
sure
time.
It did, yeah. Jack Nicholson was in it.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah. But like, there's so many funny scenes in it too. And like, one of my favorite parts, it's such a small part, but when Steve Martin's character shows up like on his motorcycle and he's like 10 feet in the air and then he lands and it's an abrupt stop. there's no skidding at all. It's just like, yeah.
No skid row.
That whole thing with him and Bill Murray, where Bill Murray is like a sadist.
Yeah.
He like loves pain.
Yeah.
That's such a weird joke to put in there, and I very much appreciate it.
Brian.
Oh, yes.
Unless anyone has another Little Shop song.
I don't. I didn't even think of it in this, and
yeah,
I should have.
If I could have, I would have put five Little Shop songs. I love the soundtrack.
There's another musical that for which that is true with me. But
Some Fun Now from Little Shop, which fucking kills me. Yeah. Ugh.
See, Dadu would probably be my favorite.
Though. Suddenly Seymour. Even Somewhere That's Green. Like it's, it's like a really like sad, like slow song, but it's really
awesome.
Beautiful, yeah.
I could never hear it without thinking of the Family Guy.
See, I didn't see that till way later, and a lot of people didn't know that was from something.
I didn't either. When I saw that, I was like, what is this?
What?
That Family Guy has like old man Herbert singing that entire
the whole song.
Yeah, it's like him and Chris.
Somewhere That's Green?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Has him even with like the blonde wig.
They
and
recreate
oh
the
God.
Whole scene.
That
yeah.
is so, yeah.
Like, verbatim.
Seth MacFarlane's such a good writer where he just like copies and pastes.
One more thing I do want to say about that movie is that I love that they stylistically make it look like a play. Like all the sets in that look like set movie sets.
It's so visually.
It's really cool.
Skid Row itself looks awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's so well done. Switching to my next musical, I would say Chicago, specifically from that. There's so many bangers in this movie, but the one that really hits me the hardest is Notice How His Mouth Never Moves. They both reach for the gun. This song super complex, and they have that whole part where they oh yes, they vote. It's so good, and I was loving
it. So it fits the period.
Yeah. Very ragtimey.
And the announcer says like calls it the press conference rag because like ragtime, so good. And I was loving the whole movie the first time I watched it, but at this was the point where I was like, this is very much for me.
Yeah, it's such a clever play on how lawyers will, you know, feed information and feed a story to their client to make everybody, to have them win over the jury the audience.
The whole dummy motif is so cool.
Yeah, it's so well done.
That movie is one of the best interpretations of a musical I've ever seen.
It is so well done. When I talk about just adaptations of musicals to movies, this is the best you could ever do.
Yeah.
It actually works better than the musical just because it's very clear what is happening in their imagination because it's like really glamorized and colorful. And then it cuts back to real life, which is like really stark, like okay. muted yeah. tones and yeah. stuff. It illustrates that way more successfully than a play does. But in general, this is one of my favorite musicals ever.
Another one that we saw at North Shore Music
Theater. Oh, hell yeah. That was really good, too. Yeah. At one point in life, I was like listing my favorite movies a lot, and two of which were Hairspray and Chicago, and the other one was Stranger Than Fiction. Somebody was like, you know Queen Latifah's in all those movies.
Oh, my God.
Like, I guess I'm a big fan of her.
Holy shit, that's... I didn't even think of that.
I didn't either until
Queen
somebody
Latifah
told me.
Fan, I know.
I didn't realize it, but she is awesome. She's really good in this,
she
too.
She is great.
Kat, you've got one off of Chicago, too, don't you?
I do. I was going back and forth between that song and then Cell Block Tango, which is
classic.
Also a great one. This, and again, anytime I've seen it, it's just so well done, and it's such a clever song.
He had it coming.
What's the one that I remember liking? Is it the one that you just played?
Yeah. Okay. There were a couple
off this one that I thought about doing, like Roxy. Is that what it's?
Yeah.
And then, but I Can't Do It Alone. That one is so clever.
Catherine
Zeta-Jones
kills it.
It's just such a clever idea to have somebody acting out a two-woman show on her own and like doing both parts of it. Like there's something so like clever and funny and
talking
they do it so well.
How she can't do it alone.
I know, talking about how she can't do it alone. That's the moment in the movie where I was like, Catherine Zeta-Jones is a badass.
Yeah, she kills
Same
it.
In Cell Block Tango too. When mm-hmm. she does her part, she is fucking nailing it.
Yeah.
We watched it with Dave and he was like, Dave said, when that part happened, he's like, Catherine Zeta-Jones is fierce in this.
This,
And all the like stories in this are really cool.
Yeah, we were listening to this morning, and some of them though are so ridiculous. Like the first story is about how a woman murders her husband because she's annoyed with how he chews his gum.
There was more to it than that.
I can't say that I blame her.
He had it coming.
Like they might have had a couple more issues than just that.
But I love that they take the main phrase from every story and use it vocally as another melody in the song. I think it's just cool. Such clever songwriting.
It's really, really clever. You pop that gum one more time.
I can't remember any of the other stories off of it.
There's
one guy is having an affair.
Mm-hmm. That's the Catherine Zeta-Jones
six
one.
Is... Pop six. What is the six? Oh, six wives. He had six wives.
Six wives. Yep.
Squish is she was carving up. She just stabbed him because her husband thought she was screwing the milkman.
Yeah.
So he ran into my knife 10 times.
And then Cicero is the Catherine Zeta-Jones one. Cicero is the hotel where she catches her husband and her sister having an affair.
Doing number 17, the spread eagle.
And then
is the Hungarian lady.
Yeah.
You don't know her story. There's no translation. It's actually hilarious.
Yeah, basically her husband died and she didn't do it, but because she can't speak English, she can't defend herself.
And Lipschitz is her husband went out to find himself and found a bunch of other people.
Mm-hmm.
He saw himself as alive and I saw her dirt.
Thank you.
Yeah, a special appearance by Maya.
She's great. It.
Special?
But the only thing in that song, I feel like they should like switch those just because the Catherine Zeta-Jones part is such a showstopper.
Yeah.
To then go to Maya's part, which is still good. It's just not as good as Catherine Zeta-Jones' part. I feel like they should maybe switch those. I don't know. I don't know about writing musicals.
Probably just the alliteration of like Pop Squish Six Cicero. That sounds
I do like
best.
That.
All right, this next one, I'm going to bring it down just a little bit.
Finally. Let's get a little too raucous in here.
This is, I would say, the climax song from Billy Elliot, Electricity. If you've never seen it or don't know anything about it, it's about a little boy in Maggie Thatcher's England who...
Ireland.
Ireland?
You idiot.
He's Irish.
Honey, this is my show. Don't embarrass me.
Sorry.
I've just been informed that it's Ireland. And anyway,
I've just been told off mic that
he lives in. We're just hearing reports that it. we've just confirmed that it is Ireland. It is in fact Ireland, but he's part of a very like a working class coal mining. Some sort of mining town. Very, very blue collar.
No, you're afraid to say like I know. Any specifics.
That's like it's diamonds.
Maggie Thatcher, right?
Oh, it's Margaret.
She's like, it's actually Sweeney Todd. the kind of town where you can imagine it wouldn't be cool for a boy to dance ballet, or ballet, as they say it in the movie / play. And
he just wanted to dance.
So anyway, the whole crux of the movie or the arc of it is his family coming around to the fact that this is something he's really good at and passionate about. And I think one of the big turning points of the movie is where his dad, who's like kind of generally uncomfortable with this, decides that he's going to really support his son and really try to get him into this ballet conservatory that he really wants to go to. And so he takes him there. They go on this trip together and he's like pushing really hard with the faculty to let him go there. And then they have him come out for his audition. And this is the song that he sings for the audition. And it starts out with the woman running the audition saying, Billy, how does it make you feel when you dance? And this whole song is like about how he feels when he dances.
Is he like, let me show you?
Yeah. Pretty much.
He's like, it's kind of like...
Two, three, four.
Just like a very non-ballet dance. Yeah. They like, your son's in the wrong school.
They have a movie version of this, right? This is from the movie version?
Yeah,
so the movie version isn't a musical, and they made it into a musical. Yeah.
That's so true. Oh, so
and it's Elton John doing the music. Him and Tim Rice, I think, his writing partner. And so the music's all great. This part is weird. It's just like a weird, like,
dance break. This is when he's dancing.
Yeah, yeah. He's like crushing it right now. If you could just imagine.
Take my word for it. He's doing so well.
And dip and step and one and two.
Oh, he's doing it. He's actually doing it.
Sir, there's a jazzercise school down the street.
This is one of the ones that we saw at the North Shore Music Theater that I thought was one of their best productions. And the little kid in it crushed it. And he's like a professional Billy Elliot. Like, that's all he does.
Yeah. See, I really like this. The music's so great in it. It didn't hit me as hard as other musicals. Like, I'm not even sure why. I loved watching it. I know it was really good, but this isn't something.
I'm with you. When we were listening back to some of the songs, I realized it's like heavier and like sadder than I remember it being, and that's just like hard to go to sit through for 3 hours. Yeah. You know. But this song, I really, really like. I think it's really well written, and it. Gives me that, like, it has that emotional punch that I'm looking for in the climax of a musical. So,
and some horns,
and I can't believe the dance section is still going on. It's like, what is this, a musical about dancing?
That'll never work.
DJ, what's your next one?
My next one is from the Book of Mormon.
Oh, hell yeah!
It's Turn It Off.
Yeah,
this is a good one.
So this song is basically about like any feelings that you have that are not allowed by Mormons to turn them off and basically suppress them and just act like everything is okay. And
so clever.
Each, like, there's a few different characters that have different parts of this song that are well, like, one's pretty grim. Like, this guy talks about how his sister had cancer and he figured he had some time, so he would wait for the new iPhone that just came out. So his sister dies while he's waiting in line for it. So, like, that's like his feeling that he has to suppress and act like it's okay. But I think the main story is that, like, if you're feeling homosexual feelings, don't.
The guy who plays it, at least in the production I've seen, is extremely flamboyant. Which. And then extremely Mormon.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
That's his, from what I recall, his first reveal of, like, possibly being gay. And then throughout the show, he starts, like, showing more signs of it. I remember when we saw it in Boston, Brian. I don't know if it's in all iterations of this play, but he shows up when they're, like, flying back home, and he's carrying, like, a bright pink suitcase, and he just has, like, such a flamboyant way about his walk.
It's so funny. And even in this song, there's a party. First of all, it's brilliant that they clap and the lights turn off, and then when they turn back on, everyone has, like, sparkly vests on.
Yeah.
Imagine that. I forgot about that. Tiny boxes, and find the boxes gay and crush it.
This for me is the musical that if every song on my list could be from this, it would
definitely.
We were listening back to a handful of the songs today, and I was like, I can't pick. Like, I don't know what every single song in this musical is so well written and good on its own, on top of it being so fucking funny and cleverly written, and also just right up my alley. I literally grew up as a missionary and somebody that walked away from the religion they were raised with. So just thematically, musically, lyrically, it speaks to me so much.
It's
and
so good.
It is my favorite musical of all time, hands
it's
down.
Up there.
Oh yeah, it's so good.
I also love that, like, Trey Parker and Matt Stone wrote it, and you wouldn't necessarily have a lot of respect for the dudes who created South Park, but this is, like, so well done and so regarded, and it won so many Tonys, and just, like, it pays homage to all kinds of older
also
musicals.
Co-written by the people that did Frozen.
Oh, yeah, and Avenue Q. Robert Lopez. Mm-hmm. He is a renaissance man. He's amazing.
Trey Parker is, like, legitimately one of my favorite songwriters.
Yeah,
he's so good.
He's so good at writing comedy, but it's also, like, just...
He's got great musical instincts. Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
There's a part in... which
Alabama
song is?
Man. Yeah.
Is it I Believe, where Elder Price is like a warlord who shoots people in the face. What's so scary about that?
Yeah.
Well...
That's from The Sound of Music.
That's my song off of this musical.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think I'm the only other person with one on their list. This one was the one, like I said, I had a hard time picking, but this is the one I went with ultimately because I went through this when I was like coming out of Christianity, where I was like wrestling with my faith or whatever, and I had all these things that I just knew were not true and were garbage.
Yeah.
But I was like, but I'm just gonna believe it. And I had people like in the church I was with who were like, yeah, but it's not about like whether you doubt it. It's fine to doubt as long as you still just act like you believe it. Like that's ooh, not, that's like God. Not exactly what they said, but they're basically encouraging you to like fake it till you make it kind of a thing. Eek. Or it's about how as long as you live your life as though you believe it, that's what faith is or something
like
that.
Hell out of here.
And then anyway, but the thing that I think is so clever about this song in particular is the way that it sets you up. It's like the rule of three in comedy where he'll say these two things religiously, like right here. We'll just take a listen. Two things that are pretty common to religion. God created the world and Jesus died.
Yeah.
And then this one. And the just the tenets of faith get more and more ridiculous as they go is so funny and clever and relatable, because even if you're not a religious person, you generally accept that most religions share the idea that God exists.
Yeah.
Isn't one like, I believe one day I will get my own planet?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Jesus, like, has
well, that's another great, that's a great example of, the subversion, where it's like one thing that most people are like, yeah, I'm on board with that, and then something that's ridiculous, which is, I believe that God has a plan for all of us. Yeah, all right, sure, religious people probably all agree on that. And then the next one is, I believe that plan involves me getting my own planet.
Yeah, yeah.
and then you're the line you just quoted, that and I believe Jesus has his own planet as well.
Two things that always make me think about you when I'm thinking about this musical. One is that the Mormon president or whatever saw this musical, and the only thing he said about it was that God doesn't live on a planet called Kolob or whatever. He just lives near it. That's the only thing he said about it. And
harsh criticism.
Our bad. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. We're the idiots.
And just the basis of this musical, how they're not necessarily making fun of Mormons.
Yeah.
They're literally just laying the facts in front of you and being like, isn't that funny that this is what they believe?
Yeah.
I just love it. It's in a loving way.
I honestly do. Yeah. I think that they were really gracious about how they did this musical.
Definitely.
Because it ultimately isn't like a big, like, fuck you or middle finger. It's just saying, like, don't take it so seriously. And I think even the climax, that's also one of my favorite lines. I believe that in 1978, God changed his mind about black people.
Black people.
That line this morning, I was like, wait, could black people not be Mormons until 1978? And Tim was like, correct.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Well, yeah. And I was thinking about this today. I don't know why, but Mormonism is like one of the only religions I've ever thought of where when people are considered moderates, it's not because they believe the crazy stuff less. It's because they don't talk about it because they know how it sounds.
Yeah.
They literally have to go to a special place to buy special underwear.
Yeah. They wear to church.
Where is this
special
place?
Church underwear.
Victoria's Secret.
Salt Lake City. The Victoria's Secret in Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City.
And can we just take a moment to appreciate how amazing Andrew Rannells is?
Him and Josh Gad together as the two main characters of this are incredible. I also feel like, I'm not going to play it, but we can't do this. I can't talk about Book of Mormon and not talk about Hasadiga Ibawai, which is so great. It's an honorable mention for me. It's great spoof of Hakuna Matata, basically.
Yeah, but 100%.
And starts out with like the village people that they're like witnessing to complaining about the things that suck about their lives, which are absolutely horrible in comparison to our lives. Things like 80% of us have AIDS and like that, there's not enough food to eat and all that. But just whenever that happens, just say Hasadiga Ibawai. And like halfway through the song, after they've got the Mormons to sing along with them and say this phrase over and over again, they reveal that it means fuck you, God, which is such a funny reveal. And so like intuitive, like you can imagine people being like, our lives are so miserable. Like, fuck whoever's responsible for this. Yeah. Yeah. And there, and the spoof thing of the like Hakuna Matata part that yeah. gets me the most. There's one part where he says something about like female circumcision, and it's like, and the clits go off. Wayo.
Yeah.
It's just, I was in awe of that musical when I saw it. It's
so great.
I like you said, I think Trey Parker has great comedy and musical instincts, and then you pair it with somebody who is like a legit mm-hmm. show tune songwriter, and they again made my favorite musical of all time.
Yeah, we were talking about on the way over. If they ever make, I can see them making a movie version of it successfully. Mm-hmm. They would absolutely have to have Josh Gad and Andrew Reynolds.
Oh yeah, for
the
sure.
leads. And I also just think it's so funny that this mid 30s man is playing a 19.
Yeah.
Now that well, I'm 19.
Which also incredible. Just brings two other honorable mentions from this one, which is 2x2, yeah. which is the one so where they're good. Figuring out where they go for their mission. And Andrew Reynolds' little side thing about how he really wants to go to Orlando. It's so funny, and so it's so clear how like self-centered he is from the beginning. It's all about like where he wants to go, yeah. and yeah. then there it goes right into the next song. This is going to be like a big change for you and me, but mostly me.
That's,
like,
I think yeah. that's my favorite one.
That one is so good.
And I will stay most. Out of your way,
out of my way. that gives me chills, and it's so funny though. And the blues God's freaking mind.
It's so good. There's a level in Mario Kart, I forget the name of it, but the one where you're in the clouds and there's like the pirate ship, it's like you're on like a beanstalk, and there's a melody towards the end of it that sounds like the Orlando specific parts. Whenever you get there, I'm always like, and putt-putt, golfing,
SeaWorld, Disney. I actually know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, that's I don't know why I don't have a song on there for on my list. It's one of my favorites ever.
I think it's actually back to you, Brian.
Oh, shit. So to switch gears, that was all the Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
Take it to a Disney place, Belle from Beauty and the Beast. It either iteration, I think they did a really good job, but the live action one that they just made with Emma Watson. Emma Watson's not a singer. That's my only gripe with it. But Same. She is really good in yeah. the part.
She's yeah, no she Amanda Bynes, girl. But she holds her own.
Imagine if she was like, a small provincial town. Yeah.
And if they try to stop us, please.
Gaston.
Gaston. Just this song in particular. I'm such a sucker for like a village song, and that's this is the epitome of what a village song
should
be.
This is a great opening number, too.
Yeah, it's awesome. I was obsessed with the cartoon one. I used to, every time I went to Disney World, I would see the Beauty and the Beast show there, and they do this whole song, and I flip out over it. And yeah, and then I just think they did a good job in the live action too.
Yeah.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour.
I love the songs in this movie.
With his tray, like always. There's again a ton of bangers in this one. Disney movies in general, they usually only have a couple songs in them. Like the cartoon only has a few, but every single one in the cartoon one is so good. And the live action one did a really good job at adding a bunch of awesome songs. The song that the Beast sings alone, his like soliloquy, Evermore, makes me spray cartoon tears. It is so sad. It kills me. It's really, really, really good.
I don't know why I couldn't get into that song. There's something about it that I just didn't care about.
Yeah, really? At first I was like, this song sounds kind of goofy. And then when I got the soundtrack, I was like, this song's pretty awesome.
I was listening to it at work and legitimately crying. And I like pulled my headphones out. And I was like, do you see this? Coworkers, I am crying here. It really, really, really gets me. I love it. But it Belle, this.
What's the chorus in that song?
I can't even remember it.
It's so low. I can't even sing it.
Like, watch her as she runs away.
Yeah.
I think that's why. It was like, I think I was just like being an idiot in my own head and like making fun of the movie when he was singing, because it sounds like a little bit of a goofy voice at first.
Yeah, and I feel like visually it's kind of, he's just like jumping
around
from rooftop to rooftop around the castle.
Yeah, I think that might have been what it was. I don't think it looks great how he jumps. It looks very like CGI, and that takes me out of it. So
yeah,
I can't like the goofiness visually takes away from maybe the. the quality of the song.
Yeah.
I love that song now, but my favorite song in this movie is not a banger in the least. It's that song Days in the Sun.
So damn good.
That's like super sad.
Days in the Sun.
Yeah, mainly about like everyone like besides the Beast wanting to go back to the way they were, but it's also the Beast?
The Beast.
The Beast opens it, but he's singing to his mom who's dying, right?
Oh yeah.
And everyone else is like, you know, I wish I could relive those days in the sun when I wasn't a fucking piece of furniture.
Some of those staff members have it worse than others.
Yeah, like the wardrobe, I think, has it way worse than like the feather duster.
Yeah, the toilet must be fucking pissed.
I'll always.
So good.
Shit eating grin on that.
Oh my god.
But I'll never forget when we watched the cartoon version as a group once, maybe a couple years ago. And there's a part where all the villagers are storming the castle and the wardrobe jumps off the second floor and lands on a guy and craters him.
Yeah.
And I never thought of this before. I forget who it was.
Erica
was like, that guy is dead.
That made me laugh so hard. I never thought of that either. Yeah, I freaking love this. I love in this song when she does the... how Belle has that little piece of music that is like her theme that she carries through. What is this? The but she won't discover that it's him till chapter 3. That like piece of music is in a bunch of other songs in the movie. I love when a character has like a theme.
Yeah,
like
and it kind of foreshadows her own story too. Because it's not until like the third act that she like comes around and she's like, "Oh, you're this beautiful handsome man." Yeah.
And the live action one fixes a couple things that the cartoon did poorly. One of which is. It doesn't feel so much like Stockholm Syndrome in this movie. They really make it clear that they're bonding and she's not just like falling in love with him because she is locked in his house.
Yeah.
I think my biggest gripe with this movie is that Gaston isn't as over the top and goofy and like so into himself. You know what I mean? There's no sense of humor about him.
Yeah, I'm like kind of on his side in the movie version. I'm like, this guy is like a man's man. I'm like into this.
See, I find a lot of humor in him. And they make him like, especially toward the end, like an absolute monster.
But it's still not quite to the same extent as Gaston from the cartoon.
Yeah, I like my Gastons to be like cartoon wrestling heels.
But I do think they did him and Josh Gad.
Yeah.
Him and Josh Gad did a really good job.
Josh Gad was awesome. He definitely stole the show like he always does.
Soon as they announced that they were doing a live action one, I was like, if he's not LeFou, then they are fucking up their entire cast.
Yeah, everybody said that.
If it wasn't him, it was going to be, what's his name from?
Beetle.
I hate him. Harry Potter. Like in Sweeney Todd.
Beetle Banfred. Yeah.
What's it? Wormtail, I think.
Yeah, he just looks
happy to oblige my friends.
Oh yeah, actually, honestly, he probably would have been a better casting choice visually.
Yeah, and maybe like 20 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
A little old.
Yeah.
Kat, it's your turn. What's next?
All right, I'm gonna bring it down a little bit, slow things down.
We need it.
And my next pick is On My Own from Les Mis.
Pretending. He's beside me. Thank you.
Yeah, so this is sung by Eponine, who I described today as the Mulan of Les Mis. Because she didn't.
She's the only Asian character.
Yeah. Well, no, she dresses up like a guy so that she can get into the revolutionary fight, and then she dies. But she has unrequited feelings for.
No.
Spoiler, sorry. She has unrequited feelings for Marius, and this song is just about her singing, like, she'll always love him, and even if he doesn't return those feelings, she's okay, like, carrying it on her own. And I think it's just such a beautiful song. And Les Mis and Cats and Phantom, those are all kind of my introduction to musical theater because my mom had like a best of Andrew Lloyd Webber that she played constantly. So I just grew to love these songs and that was kind of my gateway musical. So this was my earliest exposure and one of my favorite early musical songs.
It's really good. This in general, I think it has like, I can't really do operettas having it be sung all the way through. There's sections that should be standalone songs that are so good, but I think for me it dilutes it a little bit because everything just keeps going.
Yeah, I totally agree. Especially in the movie version because there are parts where like Hugh Jackman is performing instead of singing. So there's parts where he's like not even really singing. He's just like,
yeah.
He's like,
that's actually a really good impression.
Very good impression.
Do you know what part I'm talking about? Exactly. There's so much of it where he's like so emotionally into it, which is great. But there are like actual notes that somebody is supposed to be singing at that point that he's not singing. And then to your point, like the melody is just boring when it's, hi, I'm introducing myself.
That takes me right out.
The themes are all very similar throughout the musical.
Jean Valjean, hello.
I just don't need it. I mean, there is definitely something that is like very spoofable about the
talking.
It's sort of like, and then you go into a song like that. That is something that you can make fun of in classic musicals, but I'll take that any day over forcing dialogue, like just standard interpersonal dialogue, into a musical structure when it doesn't make sense.
Totally. This in particular, I've seen live a few times, mm-hmm. one of which is North Shore. I love seeing it live. It's very powerful.
It feels very epic.
Yeah. The movie did not do a damn thing for me, though.
Really? The Anne Hathaway song, I almost put it on my list, is one of my, to me, one of the most moving things in a...
I did really like that.
A movie version of a musical that I've ever seen. I think she won an Oscar for
that. She did.
And she... I was like sobbing. Well... Kat and I went to see the movie version of Les Mis with my parents, and me, Kat, and my mom were like inconsolable by the end of that movie.
I was hiding my face in my jacket, didn't want anyone to see me.
I wasn't like tearing up. I was sobbing at the end of that movie.
That like crying where your whole body is just shaking.
From that one song?
No, that song's about halfway through, but it's very depressing. It's like one of the saddest songs I've ever heard. And I think Anne Hathaway is such a good actress. And so she just, her acting in that scene is really, really good. I think the whole scene is pretty much like a close up of her face as she's singing this like harrowing tale of how things used to be good and now she's a prostitute, and like it's so sad.
I dream in time gone by.
And her voice is so good too. I described that movie once. I described that scene as being worth the price of admission for that movie once,
because it is my favorite part.
It's so good. But the last song is also really moving too, I think. The Songs of Angry Men, or whatever it's called, because it's like so many people that you've seen throughout the movie, sorry DJ, have died. I'm not telling you which ones, although you know one already.
You don't expect somebody to die in a movie called The Miserables.
Oh,
I thought they all lived happily ever after. Yeah. But the song is sort of like a hope for things to come, and like we've all there's a lot of things going on in it. There's like a passed away father who's singing to his daughter and like wishing her hope for the future, but also like revolutionaries who have died who are singing about how they're still hoping for a better future and all that. I don't know, there's just something about it that's really relatable and moving, and just got me on the day that we went to go see it. And my dad was like the only person just like stone faced, like
he was like, I'm not with these people.
My dad is a robot.
Very embarrassing. Oh,
I hate to derail us, but I got to go back to Book of Mormon for just a second, because my dad is he is a Bible scholar. That's how I describe
you saw him. The Book of Mormon with your parents.
I did.
You?
Yeah.
How did that go?
Better than I expected it to. They actually bought us tickets to go see that.
Did they know what it was about?
I don't.
Yes.
Think
no. They definitely did.
They did.
They had a sense that it was like. But one thing you have to know is that for most Christians, they don't like Mormons. They think that Mormons are like a goofier version of their religion, which it kind of is, but it's also like, you're still pretty goofy.
Yeah. Like,
that's how I feel about it. But my parents are really like moderate and progressive when it comes to Christianity. Yeah. My dad is like a legitimate scholar. Like he's not
the Indiana Jones of Bible study. Yeah.
Anyway, he does a lot of traveling. The reason I brought it up is he does a lot of traveling to foreign countries for his job. And one day he came back from a trip to Africa, and the types of complaints that he was like levying.
There weren't enough hangers in the closet, I think.
And there was no AC, and he couldn't connect to the Wi-Fi. we just teased him so much that it was exactly the Mormons' complaints in Hasadiga Ibawai. Because I think like one of the things that they complain about is that the plane was crowded and the bus was late.
Someone took our luggage away.
So he was like literally those guys. My parents, I think, liked it a lot, especially because, again, at the end, it's not saying like fuck religion and fuck Mormonism or anything like that. It's just saying it's a metaphor, and if it helps you with your life, then that's fine, but don't take it too seriously, exactly. kind of a thing. And so I think the fact that it's not like an in-your-face like atheist diatribe helps.
I do remember
people like they were uncomfortable with Hasadiga Ibawai. Yeah, I think
that's during the intermission, they were like, some of those songs are interesting.
I believe in absolutely nothing, but that song still makes me uncomfortable at parts. talking about fucking God and the cunt, I was like,
yeah. I've heard you hear the word clit and cunt more than you've ever heard.
Yeah. When he says their clits get cut right off, I like cringe. Like I have to like clench my entire body because I like feel like I can feel pieces of my body being cut off. Like,
yeah.
Very uneasy about it.
Your clit specifically.
Yeah, yeah. God. Like my clit is mine and nobody else's. grow up.
Whose turn is it?
I think it's Kat,
TJ.
Right?
No,
TJ.
I depressed us all for all
right,
a
yeah.
moment.
Yeah. All right. So I guess I'll stick with the non bangers, yeah. My next one is Not While I'm Around from Sweeney Todd.
Hell yeah. Mr. Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, this movie I saw for the first time. I think I like pulled an all-nighter the night before and went to the theater like at 11 in the morning the next day. I don't know why, but went and saw it, fell asleep for 90% of it, and loved it.
I loved every second.
And then, you know, upon a second viewing, I actually did love it. But the song I really love because for some reason I just love like talented kids in plays or like, you know, movies based on plays that have just like an enormous talent. And this kid in this movie has such a great voice. And this song in particular is just, you know, really nice because he Jesus Christ!
Spraying everywhere.
So he shows up with Sacha Baron Cohen's character, Signor Pirelli, who's trying to sell like a hair elixir. And he's basically like the slave to that character. And then he meets Sweeney Todd and Helena Bonham Carter's character.
Mrs. Lovitz.
Yes. And becomes like, you know, buddies with them, and he gets this really great relationship with Mrs. Lovitz. And is it Lovett? Because it's Mrs.
Lovett,
Lovitz. Yeah. Lovett.
Mrs. Lovett.
It's John Lovett's mom.
Yeah, if only.
This is John Lovett.
Who looks exactly like John Lovett. But like they start to build this like really nice relationship, and he like is very protective of her. And that's what this song is about, is that he's not going to let anything bad happen to her as long as he has anything to do about it. And I think that's like really cute for like a kid to, you know, want to look after like his mother figure now. You know?
I love that. I want to say that I don't love Stephen Sondheim in general, that he wrote this play, the play version of this, but I always end up loving his stuff. And this one in particular, I like a lot because it's like kind of horror.
Yeah.
It's definitely
very scary. Grisly. Sure.
There are scenes in this movie that are hard for me to watch because of how graphic they are.
Yeah.
The throat cutting scenes.
So much of it.
I don't, this movie is terrible. You don't need to watch it, but Jersey Girl There's a. I thought you liked it.
There's a. Bitch.
To everyone listening at home, I'm making the executive decision for you. Don't see Sweeney.
No, I actually really like the movie version of it. Tim Burton, I know, has kind of like a new metal connotation, but
yeah.
It's visually, it's really cool. It's awesome. The casting is great. But in Jersey Girl, the main character, the titular Jersey Girl, is obsessed with Sweeney Todd as a musical. So for her talent show, her and Ben Affleck do a scene where they like kill one of the people getting their hair cut, and it's the song about like making the people into pies or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, that's my favorite one. A little
and all the audience is just like horrified. It's just one of the funniest moments in a movie.
I kind of want to watch that scene. That sounds cool.
And a little piece of advice for Tim Burton. Put Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter in more of your movies. They are great in this movie.
They are so underutilized.
Where did they come from?
Sign them to a multi-year deal or something.
These young unknowns.
Stop wasting your time with these other actors and actresses.
Like, especially nowadays, Johnny Depp is like the boner killer for me. But he's so good in this. He's so good in this. It's like, really it's kind of perfect casting.
That's actually the next movie Tim Burton cast him in.
What, Boner Killer?
The Boner Killer. Helena Boner Killer.
It is so good. We have to watch Into the Woods together. Into the Woods is really great, too.
That's Sondheim, too, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Sondheim, I think, loves a little kid, an awesome little kid. Soliloquy.
Did he do that was dangerous for saying.
He loves little kids. But I showed you, the only one I showed you was the song that a little kid sings that's really similar to Not While You're Around. There are giants in the sky.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that one's as good for me. I love it.
Brian, I think that brings us to you.
Sick. I'll take us back to Disney and with When We're Human from The Princess and the Frog. This is like more of a modern classic.
Ooh, a little ragtime.
Have you ever seen this movie, Kat?
No, I haven't.
Kat, what other types of music are there?
There's
Yesteryear. Yesteryear. this movie is so good. It's such a modern classic. But this in this song, it's the alligator Lewis talking about how he wants to be human. With the two main characters, Naveen and Tiana, who are currently turned into frogs, and they're all just talking about wanting to go back to their lives as humans. And it's so
That's
good.
That's the overarching theme of your list.
Wanting to be human again.
Yeah.
We'll be human again. We'll
and
be human
one of mine,
again.
The Days in the Sun.
Yeah, yeah. But the music in this blew me away. We were listening to the opening number on the way here, almost there. If you haven't seen it, which I feel like nobody has, I don't know why. It was like a triumphant return to like classic animation for Disney. And while it's very represented at like the parks and stuff, and I think it's critically acclaimed, but I feel like I very rarely run into people that have seen it and love it.
I definitely haven't seen it.
It's wonderful.
It's awesome.
I've sat a lot of
people. I actually have it on my phone right now.
Really?
Yeah.
The whole movie?
Yeah. So there's like... like Movies Anywhere apps, you know, that kind of thing. Like I had Disney Movies Anywhere, so I bought this movie and I have the app on my phone, so that's one of the movies.
On your phone.
I will pull it up right now.
I highly, highly recommend it though. It's one of my like honestly all time favorites, and this song in general is one of my favorite Disney songs ever.
The fact that you picked a non-show musical for one of your songs is causing me to call an audible right now. I've got another one that I'm going to swap in.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to disqualify me.
No, I was gonna say, go home.
The episode is
canceled.
I did ask Tim last night. I was like, can I put Smash songs on here?
Hell yeah.
And
do
I
know how many? I wanted to put a bunch on that.
I wanted all five of my songs to be Smash songs. I never got a clear answer, so I didn't put any on here.
We talked about this on the way here, so...
Throwing shade.
In general, we would classify a musical as a movie where they're singing the songs to progress the story. Mm-hmm. But I like so many musical-driven movies that aren't technically musicals, but I would still consider them one. Pop Star and Pitch Perfect and that kind
that
of thing.
That Thing You Do?
Yeah, totally. Like, those aren't technically
that
musicals.
That should be a musical. The fact that there's no That Thing You Do musical
what the
is
hell?
An absolute travesty.
Totally.
DJ is showing proof. Although, how do we know you didn't just download that?
Because it's the first one.
That's true.
I bought it on Blu-ray last night and downloaded the digital version, and that's the first the one. It's the most recent one.
He Googled the movie poster, and we're supposed to believe
checks
it.
Out. He Googled screenshots that prove you
and delete history.
Because I went back and forth about which song I was going to pick from the last 5 years, because I wanted to pick a Jeremy Jordan song just because he's like a legitimate Broadway guy.
I love
his voice. Yeah, he's like my Broadway crush. But
I can't deal with his voice for some reason. There's something like a little too Broadway about how he comes across.
It. Yeah, but Anna Kendrick's songs just resonate more with me, and a lot of the songs are like perfect for her range. Mm-hmm. But that was like, so can I put Smash songs on here? And I never got an answer, so I didn't. But
I never got an answer. I think I was like, no.
What do you mean? Yeah.
I think I was like, fuck no.
You say, is that not clear?
What do you mean you never got an answer? I made you sleep on the porch.
But to go back to what you said, Brian, like that show used music to forward the story.
Hell yeah.
And Let's Be Bad, again.
Let's Be Bad on this piece of paper.
I still remember.
Fox Mambo.
Yeah, the guy that took over the second season as a showrunner was like, I did this show because Let's Be Bad is one of the best things I've ever seen in my life on television.
It really is. I have to at least show you that song, Deej. But Smash is so good. They develop a movie, a musical in it called Bombshell about Marilyn Monroe, but the dude who wrote all the music in it is Mark Scheinman, the guy who wrote Hairspray.
Oh, cool.
So it has that same type of like old-timey style, and it's some of the best musical music I've ever heard.
It's so great. And even in the second season, they bring in another more modern musical, and they have modern-day musicians write like Andrew... I'm forgetting his last name right now.
From
the guy from Something
Jack's
Corporate.
Mannequin, yeah.
Andrew McMahon did a couple songs for that musical, and some of those songs are my favorite.
Yeah. I Heard Your Voice in a Dream, I think he wrote that.
I wanted to put that. That specifically is the one I want to put on my list.
I'll play it on the way home. You'll love it, DJ. Okay.
I'm
going to keep us moving in the interest of time. I think we're down to our last ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm ending this rotation, and then Kat, you'll start our first one. That was your fourth.
That was my fifth. Oh, no, it was fourth. Sorry. Sorry.
So this is from Newsies. This is King of New York. It's probably my favorite song from that musical. It's just a nice catchy tune.
Another Jeremy Jordan.
I was going to say
this
that.
Is after. So if you haven't seen this or know anything about this, it's about newsboys in, I want to say, like the 20s or 30s who are trying to get paid a fair wage. Basically, the newspapers have decided they're going to pay them less. And so they're going on strike for the first time. And it becomes like a whole thing in the city. And this reporter that they befriend writes a whole article about it. So this is after she writes a story, and it's like a buzz all around town that they're fighting back about this, and they're feeling like they're famous and they're the kings of New York at this point. But it's so it's like all the guys in the Newsies kind of taking a turn singing about why they feel like the king of New York. It's a fun scene.
It's such a pick-me-up. I love this song.
Yeah, Seize the Day is my honorable mention. That song just like pumps me up. It's
absolute
so
banger.
Good. And that I always, whenever we're at work and people are like, we should unionize, and then my supervisor is like, we can't be a union. I'm like, according to the Newsies, we're a union if we say we're a union.
Exactly.
Have you guys ever seen Bugsy Malone?
Is that a musical?
It is, yeah.
No.
And I'm just thinking about it now that I probably should have put something of that play, or not, I guess not play, but like
that's like an all kids gangster musical.
Yeah,
right?
It's from the 70s, and like the two main characters are Jodie Foster and Scott Baio
when they're younger.
Yeah,
that's
wow,
awesome.
That sounds awesome.
Like the oldest person in the movie is probably like 15.
Wow, that sounds cool.
So it takes place in like the 20s, and you know, like gangster style, like Al Capone kind of gangsters, and they have like Tommy guns that shoot pies.
That's so
it's
cool.
Like it's the most like harmless like
it's
like
so
clever
so
thing that I've ever seen, and a lot of the songs in it are like unbelievable, and I'm like
I love that.
Bummed that I didn't think to put any of that on
put
my
it
list.
On our list. We'll watch it.
Okay,
But you've seen the Newsies, obviously.
I haven't.
Oh, it's so, so
it's
great.
It's really good.
They did a thing a couple years ago at this point where they released the recording of the Broadway show in theaters, and we went to see it. It was bonkers awesome.
Yeah, it was so good.
I feel like I got to see it on Broadway. I feel like it's not...
The quality was
I would do that way more often. I feel like even when like Broadway level productions come to Boston, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
And I would going to see an actual Broadway production in the theater... I'm down with that. I don't actually need to be there live.
Even the original movie, like Christian Bale is the Jack character, and he does an incredible job. Like you wouldn't associate him with musicals, but
not at all.
I was watching that so much in middle school. My music teacher was like obsessed with it. So I was watching Christian Bale, and like I didn't realize till way later that it was him.
I did the North Shore Music Theater summer camp, and they picked like specific musical numbers from a bunch of different movies, and we just like performed them. And Seize the Day was one of them. So I just remember rewinding that scene and watching Christian Bale do it like a million times.
He's really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kat, why don't you start our final round here?
All right. So my last pick is Revolting Children from Matilda.
Cool.
This song is so fucking good. It is another one of those same veins where it just like pumps you up and it gets you so excited. So for people that don't know the story of Matilda, she is this really smart little girl that has telepathic abilities, and she goes to this really dark and dreary, strict school that is led by the Trunchbull. And she's very mean. She has like really cruel punishments. And this song is towards the end of the musical where the Trunchbull has been overthrown and the kids can finally like have their freedom. And they're like, yeah, we're going to take back our school. And I like the play on revolting children, because Trunchbull hates kids. She thinks they're disgusting
and calls
gross.
Them revolting all the time.
And but they're also overthrowing her, so it's the double play on revolting.
I love that.
And I think the wordplay in this is just so clever. The musical aspect of it, the melody and the tune and everything, is just so good. It's so catchy. And this is one of the coolest numbers in the show, because they have this big gate. The story about Matilda, she's super into reading and words and all of that. So they have this big gate throughout the whole thing that has all the letters and the alphabet on it. So as they're going through, they're like turning around letters to spell some of the words that they're singing. And they have adults dressed in the uniform to signify older students and younger students. So it's just a lot of different visual plays to go along with the different context of the song. And I think it's just... Tim Minchin did an incredible job with this.
She doesn't know Tim Minchin at all?
Song. Yeah.
I think he's an extremely clever songwriter. One of his songs we heard last year, randomly I decided to play it, and it had us dying laughing from start to finish. It's called Thank You God. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but
no.
So he's like mainly a comedy musician. But he wrote the music for Matilda.
I don't think I knew
a couple
that.
Of other things. But he... the song is about how some guy came up to him and said, hey, I'm a big fan of yours, but I don't understand why you're an atheist. Like, the reason I'm not an atheist is because my mom had cataracts, and then one day God miraculously healed her. And so it's him being like, so I wrote the song about how I changed my ways. And then I can't do it justice, but it starts out him just being really like repentant and like, I'm so sorry, how could I have been so blind? And then the whole song just goes on to talk ironically about how ridiculous it is to believe that because your mom's cataracts got better that God exists and is the one that healed it. And it's basically like the idea is I guess God is like he doesn't care about poverty, but he does care about the cataracts of middle-class women in your town. As long as they pray exactly the right way in exactly the right church. And like, but it's like just sarcastic all the way through and so fucking funny.
You're such a sucker for that.
Yeah, but I think that his sense of humor translates really well into a lot of the music from Matilda, because there is a lot of that clever wordplay and painting pictures lyrically. And they incorporate all of that in transition it really well to the set.
He, in general, I think is a genius.
Yeah.
And I've heard a super long podcast with him where he's just talking about like his beliefs. And he had something that went viral a couple weeks ago, some like graduation speech that he gave about just like his philosophy for approaching life that I think is really reinforces
the sunscreen song.
Huh?
The sunscreen song. We'll go there later.
Anyway, I'm done fanning out about Tim Minchin. DJ, what's next?
My final song is Hot Patootie from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That's awesome. I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah. I love it, just about every song in this play. I love the movie the most, obviously. But
I didn't even know it was a play.
Yeah, yeah. That's yeah, that's how it started out, and then Richard O'Brien wrote the play, and
Riff Raff.
Yeah, and it's a cool like rock and roll song that I feel like perfectly encapsulates like greasers like partying like on a Saturday night. And, you know, Buddy Holly references and this and that, and just like making out with your girlfriend in the back of your car, that kind of thing. But, Meatloaf like sells the shit out of the song in the movie.
Meatloaf rules.
But yeah, have you guys ever seen, and I am expecting all of you to say no, have you ever seen Shock Treatment?
No.
Oh, no, you've mentioned this to me before.
It's like the unofficial sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's made by the same guy. It's not as good of a movie at all, but like a lot of the songs in the movie are awesome, and I was going to put them on my list, but you guys would have not known what I was talking about whatsoever. So maybe I'll just show you like at a later point.
I would love to.
I've still never seen Rocky Horror.
Oh really?
Tim, it's so good. So yeah.
It's so weird.
It's so goddamn weird. I cannot believe that it came out when it did and that anybody even like spent 1 second watching it. Because it is so bizarre. Now, like you watch it, you're like, it's so weird and that it's really
that it
cool.
Makes sense today.
Yeah. It was definitely ahead of its time.
It's got the longest running like cinematic viewing in history. It's like going on like it's like over 40 years at this point.
Wow.
We keep waiting for a midnight showing to go because I feel like that's the right element to see it.
That was the first time I ever saw it was midnight show. They used to do it in Harvard Square every week. They moved it to Boston Common Lows. I'm pretty sure they still do it every Saturday.
It used to be on VH1 all the time for some reason. Like I remember just every Sunday afternoon it was on, so watching it pretty much every weekend.
Yeah. It's really cool when you do see it live because they show the movie, they act it out live, people are talking back to the screen, people are throwing stuff. It's very interactive and it's hilarious. The call and responses that people do are so funny and clever. It enhances it a lot and it pokes a lot of fun at how absolutely weird that movie is.
Yeah. There's a song called Damn It Janet where two of the main characters, Brad and Janet, like singing a song to each other about how in love they are with each other. And there's a point where Brad writes, like, draws a heart on the door. And there's a line where it's like, "Damn it, Janet, I love you," and he draws the heart. But the crowd sings, "Damn it, Janet, I love doors." Really funny.
I forgot about that. Damn it, Janet's probably my favorite. I also really like "Touch Me."
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I wanna be dirty. But it's really good. We should go. I mean, today is Saturday. Let's we'll figure it out. Susan Sarandon is
a babe.
Yeah, she's great in that.
A babe and so great in that.
And you've gone on record. You love Sue.
Sue's my girl.
Susie girl.
She's really good.
She's like one of my all-time celebrity crushes.
Same. Just kidding. Barry Bostwick, though. Mm.
Ooh, Barry Bonds.
He's looking real good.
Kid loves Barry Bonds.
Baseball.
You're such a sportsman.
So Brian.
My final is from this little independent musical. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. It's called Grease. Grease.
Being sarcastic.
It's really, really good. This is the finale number in which they...
And their flying car.
Flying car.
Yeah, what the fuck?
It's in the imagination of the people in the movie.
It's my favorite song to incorporate the phrase ding dong.
Actually,
a
I'm more of a fan of Gramma Lamma Lamma, but I mean, just good songwriting.
Is it Ramma Lamma Lamma?
Kadinga da dinga dong.
Do wop do wada wada yabba da boom da boom.
Yeah, let's figure it out because it changes the meaning to this song.
Yeah, for real.
Significantly.
It could make or break this play.
It was hard for me to pick a favorite from this because there's obviously some of the classic, really good songs. But this particular one, Melodically, just really kills me. And it has that, in the movie, that weird scene of that kid doing that, like, penguin dance.
Yeah, he's, like, electrocuted almost.
And, yeah, that guy is spastic.
Spastic. Also, Fox did Grease Live a couple years ago, probably. And it is such a good iteration of it. They nailed it.
I keep meaning to watch it because you've, it's, like, given it such high praise.
Wholehearted recommendation. They did such a good job with it. It's just so well directed. That's not usually something that I particularly comment on, but it's just perfectly done. And the shots are just everything that they should be. And it's crazy because it's all unfolding live. And just the casting's really great. It's exactly what it should be.
I remember being so in love with this movie and watching it all the time. And then for like a surprise birthday present, my mom took me to see it live. And I had never seen the stage version of it, and I was scandalized because it's so different.
Yeah, there's a lot of swears. A
lot of swearing and way more sex jokes, and I was just like, why did you take me to this? I'm too young. I was like 10, and
never too young.
Yeah.
My mom got like a 25th anniversary VHS or whatever when it came out, and it came with a script to the play. So I was trying to read it along with the movie, and I was like, this is way different, and there's a bunch of swears. What the hell is this? I remember being really weirded out.
Yeah.
He still can't sing.
Thank you, Grandma.
Her name is Nanny.
Her name is Grandma Lama Ding Dong.
Thank you for that.
All right. So my final song to round us out is from a little movie called Sing Street.
Oh, fuck yeah.
It's so good.
Have I never talked to you guys about this movie?
I don't think we've talked about it yet.
I love this movie.
This movie's so good. If you don't know anything about it, it's about a kid in Ireland who decides he's going to start a band to impress a girl. Basically, he lies to her and says that he has a band and he's a musician so that she'll star in his music video because he thinks she's a babe. But then he actually starts writing songs with some of his friends from school, and they go through all these different musical phases where he starts listening to one artist and writes a song like that. Listens to another artist and writes a song like that, and his brother's kind of coaching him and showing him all these different cool bands. I think it's in the 80s, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
And so it's just fun to see their evolution as they're writing these songs and see him like actually fall in love with writing music, and his like dream at the end of it is to like go off to London and actually become a songwriter. And this is my favorite song on the album. In the movie, it's called Drive It Like You Stole It, and it's kind of like the big climactic moment. They're playing at the school dance, and this is the song that they do. And it's just a banger. There's a ton of great songs on that soundtrack, but
the credits barely started to roll before I was on iTunes buying this
album.
It's still on my phone right now, and I will prove it again.
This wasn't in theaters, right? Was this for TV?
I think it was in theaters.
Oh, it was?
How did it sneak by me?
It's so good. And it's just like a cute, really cute coming of age story, little romance between him and this girl. And they actually do start shooting music videos. If you've ever seen the Irish one you really like, Kat?
The Commitments.
If you've ever seen that, it almost feels like a modern version of that in a way.
I love A Beautiful Sea.
Oh yeah,
That song really got me. I love when they're shooting the music video for it, and there's like a pause like in the middle of it where they clap.
Yeah.
So everyone like stops playing their instruments in the video just to go. It's so good.
Yeah, I love that.
You showed me that.
I also love Brown Shoes.
Yeah, I was just gonna say Brown Shoes.
It's so good.
Man,
give it a watch.
And also the songs that are in the movie that are like songs that we listen to like in real life, like. Town Called Malice by The Jam is on that soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
And Steppin' Out by Joe Jackson.
Steppin' Out, yeah. And In Between Days by The Cure.
There's a
Duran
song on there, too, I think, that they're like watching. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's like their first influence.
And it's like the whole family around the TV like deciding whether that's going to be like the new sound. Like, are they going to be a thing? Like,
yeah. I was like so choked up at the end of this movie too.
Me too.
Yeah,
I was like,
man, I would hate to ruin it for anybody who hasn't seen it. It's such a good ending. I think the relationship between him and his brother is one of the most like touching parts of the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
I gotta see it.
Yeah, I think you'll love it.
I wrote it
down.
Very
good. The same guy, the same guy that wrote and directed it, did The Commitments and also Begin Again and Once. So like musical movies are his things. Yeah.
Have you guys talked to Jared about this movie?
Yes. Okay. I think I watched it because he recommended it.
Yeah, don't fucking listen to me then, right?
Yeah, you suck.
Well, yeah, so if even if you're like, I don't know, I don't really like movie musicals or whatever, at the very least, download the song Drive It Like You Stole It, because it rules.
If you don't like movie musicals, lighten the hell up, man.
So that brings us to the end of our respective playlists. Any final thoughts on musicals or show tunes in general before we get into our drinking game?
Yeah, it's time to stop. No more musicals.
Come on.
We've had enough.
No, more, more, more.
We've hit our peak.
Everything that you could say through song has been said.
No, stop it. I'd like to honorably mention Wicked and The Wizard of Oz, because they are really, really great.
I almost put Defying Gravity on my list, and then I was like, I'm not a basic bitch.
Yeah. When I was like looking for beers, I was seeking out like Wizard of Oz related things. And I was like, is it a musical? Like, I know Wicked is a musical, but like, I was more so like focused on Wizard of Oz.
I think it would be.
Definitely.
Yeah. But regardless, I shied away from it. And then I saw like a beer that was like Evil Twin beer. And I was like, ooh. And then I was like, wait, they're not twins.
They're casual acquaintances.
Yeah.
Not even related.
Oliver would be an honorable mention musical as a whole for me. I love that.
Nice. I went through a phase where I was like trying to download all the classics that I'd never seen, and Oliver was one of them. I never got around to watching it. Fuck
Kat,
me.
Kat one time was telling me about how she was in Oliver in high school, but she did it two times, and so the way she said it to me was, oh yeah, I was in Oliver twice. And I was like, I thought you said Oliver twiced. And I was like, that's not how it's pronounced.
That's so good. I actually meant to ask, were any of you guys in like musicals when you were younger? That answers my question for you.
Yeah, I did. I was in like an acting program when I was in like elementary and middle school, and I did Oliver Twist twice. and I did The Wizard of Oz and Sound of Music.
Hell yeah. Yeah. No rules. I was in the Music Man in middle school. I was one of the
Oh man, I Stout. I guess that would be my honorable mention, like songs from the Music Man.
Nice.
I was watching clips because I didn't have time to watch the whole movie the other night, but
so good.
I forgot how good some of the
good
songs are.
Good night, ladies. That was me.
The one they sing on the train, like all the
What are you talking?
He doesn't know the territory.
I've never seen it.
Really, it's
a good one.
It has that like weird old air to it, but it's really great.
I wouldn't have watched it if I didn't have to watch it in eighth grade, like, because our teacher made us.
I think the monorail episode of The Simpsons channels that so
very
well.
Much.
God, very what much. A slam dunk.
Mm-hmm.
We are kind of running over time, so why don't we transition to our drinking game? Today's drinking game is called Knock Off Broadway. We have come up with 13 cheap knockoff versions of famous Broadway musicals.
Mockbusters?
We're exactly. going to read those titles to you, and you have to guess the real musical our fake one is based on.
Love it.
Ooh, awesome.
So let me get you the buzzer.
I'll give you a warm-up example.
Okay.
Apparition of the Theater.
Phantom of the Opera. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so they're going to be similar.
I went to go reach for the buzzer.
Some of these I think will be pretty easy. Some might take a little bit.
Yeah, some of them you'll get right away. Other ones are thinkers.
So in an Oliver twice, I'm going to be reading the questions and Tim's going to be keeping score.
Okay.
I'm going to be keeping score. Also, Brian, I'm going to be your designated drinker.
Dope.
So whoever loses each question will have to drink. Brian, in your case, I'll drink for you.
Hell yeah. Thanks, man.
Let's see. Oh, so if you think you know it, you buzz in, you can guess. If you get it wrong, your opponent gets to give their guess. I would doubt either of you wouldn't be able to get it in two guesses. So okay. I think we should be fine.
Yeah. All right. Number one.
Take it away.
The Monarch and Yours Truly.
The King and I.
Shit.
Yep.
Yes.
Good job.
Thanks.
The next one, Monthly Apartment Payments.
Rent.
Fuck!
Yeah.
I gotta get my head in the game.
Okay. Number three, lard.
Ooh. Greece.
Yes. Yep. Shit. I was thinking it's definitely fat. It
has to be. I'm like, hairspray.
All right. Next one is deviant wellies.
Kinky boots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, that's a deep cut. For me.
Take a drink, Deej.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you idiot.
It rules McGee over here.
I'll wait till you take your sip so that you have a fair advantage in answering the next question.
A ferret what?
A ferret?
A ferret vantage. His vantage point into our recording studio. All right. Aerosol.
Fuck.
Hairspray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Take a drink, DJ.
Trying to get ready for the next question.
He's cheating.
Can I do like a lump sum?
Yeah.
Another great musical.
Felines.
Ooh, cats.
Mm-hmm.
He's like kind of a tag.
Pick up, Timmy. Paper boys.
Newsies.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this one might be a little tough. Nothing's off limits.
Anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
What? It might be tough.
I don't know.
Tough for you to get
Money
before Brian.
Goes, yeah. Anything goes. Sounds good.
Nothing's off limits. How many do we have left?
We have 5 left.
I still have a chance.
Fantasy ladies.
Dream girls.
Sounds good too.
Eternally flannel.
Forever plaid.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I could have guessed that.
That's a real deep cut, mm-hmm. I feel like.
I only know it because there's like a poster for it in the restaurant at North Shore Music Theater. Yeah.
Can I tell a Tim story real quick?
Sure.
So me, Ryan, and Tim were eating dinner in the restaurant at the North Shore Music Theater, and Brian saw that poster and he's like, I don't think I'm familiar with this. Do you guys know anything about it? And Tim was like, oh yeah, my parents saw it and loved it. I think it's about a group of musicians.
Like every sentence that I used to describe it, I would say it so tentatively and then look at Kat for approval.
Like, and I was like, I don't
it's
know.
It's about a bunch of guys. And anyway, I think they played music. It was so comedically done. Three times in a row did he do that.
Car accident?
Like, you don't know anything about it.
And I think they're ghosts.
That's so goddamn funny.
Okay. East Sector narrative.
West Side Story.
Mm-hmm. Autumn arousal.
Fall hard.
No.
Brian, you have a guess? We switched the season up on this one.
You,
because it's a knockoff, not exactly a direct translation.
Hmm. Spring Awakening.
Yep.
Fuck yeah. Do I have to buzz? No.
No. And then our last one, deity enchantment.
Deity enchantment, huh?
Brian.
Oh, it's my turn? I buzzed in?
For once?
Deity, I would say goddess magic. Thank you.
No.
What is it again?
Deity enchantment.
Enchantment. I don't know. Queen well, dream.
A deity is a god, and an enchantment might also be called a spell.
Oh, I got it. Can I do it again? I was on the right track.
Wow, how did you get there?
I don't know. Can I guess again?
I just want to let everyone know that the button on the buzzer says buzz, and it sounds like this. That's not a buzz whatsoever.
There are four different buzzers, options. So
no, they're not.
Is a buzz.
They don't know that.
I end up seeing Godspell.
This episode brought to you by the Buzzer app on iPad.
I only care about it because of Wet Out of American Summer.
My high school did it so many times and I never saw it.
It's not great. I kind of liked it, but it's a little heavy-handed.
Isn't it just like
day by day
parables?
Yeah, pretty much.
All I know is that Jesus wears a Superman shirt in it.
Like the daughter in the Flintstones?
Yep. Parables Flintstones.
Gotta have my chocolatey parables.
I liked that game, guys. Good work.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Kat came up with D Deity Enchantment, and I loved that one. The one, the ones that are like a really long walk were my favorite ones. All right, I think we've covered it. DJ won that. I think there's no question about that. That was like a landslide.
Oh, yeah, cool. Thanks, I'm guys. Undefeated. Yeah. I own three copies of Drinking Buddies.
You are drowning in Drinking Buddies. So any final words? Kat, do you want to plug Conquest?
Sure. So I'm on a little podcast called Conquest.
It's so little.
It's the tiniest.
It's
like
adorable.
Yeah. me and Chinmo, we talk about different conventions we've gone to, different pop culture tent poles. You can find us at Conquest Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And then we're on the wasted-minds.com website.
DJ, anything to plug for yourself?
Yeah, sure. Top 5 of Death podcast. Any form of social media, just look for Top 5 of Death.
I'm Brian. I like musicals and Disney, and that's all I want to plug. I do lead a charmed life, and I have won almost every lottery I've won to get into musicals. So I know what I'm talking about.
You do have like a
also,
knack for that.
You guys are both two of the funniest guys that I know. And are you both on Twitter? Can people like follow you guys?
I'm on Twitter, but I do not use it.
Okay.
C. Brian. I also have a Twitter, but I barely ever use
it. Got it.
Yeah. Instagram at Brian Babs with a Z. I'm pretty
funny.
Yeah,
your
on
stories
there.
Are pretty fun.
Thank you.
At DJ O'Sullivan, but you don't have to.
Please don't. Yeah. And I'll just plug the Wasted Minds website, wasted-minds.com. We've got all of our podcasts linked there. And if you want to know more about the drinking game we're developing, Drinking Buddies, you can find that there as well. All right. Well, thank you to our panel. It was a blast to have you guys on. Last time was a blast to have you on. This time we'll have you on again, I'm sure.
I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, the next one's got to be, I feel like it's got to be comedy albums or something like that. And we do Lonely Island.
If I can mention Lonely Island five times, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. We have talked about doing a straight up Lonely Island episode. We'll figure it out. To everybody listening at home, here's to you.
To you. Tink.
How ready and psyched are we? Life is about to change for you, and life is about to change for me, and life is about to change for you, and but me mostly. And there's no limit to what we can do, me and you. But mostly me.